Kerr went down to the shops and in a storeroom there dug up a strange machine. He explained it was used to analyze the internal structure of mineral samples and to find crystalline cracks inside metals. He showed Angus how to work it. You put the emanation tube under the object to be examined, and you read the results on the top screen. There was also a trace paper reader that showed metals in alloys or rocks. It worked on some wavelength he called subproton field emanation, and this was intensified by the lower tube, and the influence went through the sample and you read it on the top screen. Being cyclo, it was quite massive, and Kerr carried it for him to the waiting plane. A guard took Kerr back, and Angus returned to the military base. They tried it with some cats they had that were cleaning the rat population out, and the cats afterward seemed cheerful enough. The screen showed the skull outline very nicely. They tried it on one of the wounded Scots who volunteered, and they found a piece of stone in his hand from a mine injury, and he too seemed fine afterward. About 4 o'clock that afternoon, they used it on Johnny. By 4:30, they had a three-dimensional picture and the trace paper. A very relieved Dr. McKendrick pointed it out to Angus.
A piece of metal. See it? A sliver just below one of the trephine holes. Well, we'll just get him ready and I can have that out with a scalpel soon enough.
Metal? Scalpel? On Johnny? No, you don't. Don't you dare touch him. I'll be right back.
With the metal trace paper flying behind him, Angus, 15 minutes later, charged in on the Chamco brothers. They worked in a separate breathe gas dome at the compound, industriously trying to assist Robert the Fox to put things back together. Angus shoved the trace under their pug nose bones.
What metal is this?
The Chamcos examined the trace squiggles.
Ferrous damonite,
they said.
A very strong support alloy.
Is it magnetic?
Demanded Angus. And they said yes, of course it was. By 6 o'clock, Angus was back in the hospital. He had a heavy electro coil he had just made. It had hand grips on it. Angus showed McKendrick how to guide it, and McKendrick worked out the best path to bring the sliver out with the least damage to tissue. A few minutes later, they had the broad sliver in their hands, withdrawn by the magnet. Later, the Chamco brothers identified it with closer analysis as a piece of a battle plane skid strut, which has to be very strong and very light. Johnny had not been conscious enough to tell anyone what he had done on the drone, and Chrissy had shooed off the historian when he tried to find out earlier. So it was a bit of a mystery as to how a sliver piece of a strut could have been daggered into Johnny's head. But whatever they had done to him, Chrissy was extremely relieved. The fever he had dropped. His breathing improved, and his color got better. The following morning, he came out of the coma and smiled a little at Chrissy and McKendrick and dropped into a natural sleep. Planetary radio was not slow in crackling with the news. There, Johnny was out of danger. The pipe major paraded his pipes and drums all around the compound on the heels of the crier who was yelling it out to work parties. Bonfires blazed both there and in various other parts of the world. And a coordinator in the Andes relayed the news that the chiefs of some peoples they had found there had declared this an annual celebration day, and could they come now and pay homage? A pilot standing by with a plane in the mountains of the moon in Africa had to get help from both coordinators and chiefs of that small colony in order to get space to take off again. So mobbed had the field become with celebrating, jubilant people. The compound radio operators had to double up on shifts to handle the message traffic roaring in on them as a result of the announcement. Robert the Fox just went around grinning at everybody.